Welcome back to Dealing Together. First caller?
I bought 3 sweaters to get the 4th free.
Oh, you got fleeced. Next caller?
I traded my old Samsung at AT&T for a new Samsung Galaxy S24 Plus and chose my plan.
That's not a bad deal.
It is not.
Our best smartphone deals. Your choice of plan. Learn how to get the new Samsung Galaxy S24 Plus with Galaxy AI on us with eligible trade-in. AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Offers vary by device. Subject to change. S24 plus 256GB offer available for a limited time. Terms and restrictions apply. See att.com/Samsung for details.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, a mini parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show, it's another listener questions episode. That's my listener questions episode song. You guys will sometimes write into me some questions about animals and evolutionary biology, and heck, you know what? I answer them, because that's who I am. And this week, I have some really interesting questions, so let's get right into them. Although, I guess before I do, if you have questions that you really want me to answer, it's just been a thing that's been keeping you up night after night, and you're like, please answer this animal question, I need to sleep, you can write to me at creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com with your question, and I endeavor to respond always. Either I will respond to your email, or when I do these listener question episodes, I will respond on the air. So thank you guys for writing in to me. Now let's get right into the first question. So here is the first listener email. I have a question about primary colors and how we view them. Are what we view as primary colors universal, or is it just an emergent property from how our cones are set up? I.e., does blue and yellow always make green, or is that an effect caused by our RGB cones? Thanks so much, and keep up the fantastic work. This is from Matt G. First of all, hi, Matt. Thank you. That is a great question. It's very interesting, right? So, like, when we see color, it is light entering our eyeballs and hitting sensory cells at the back of our eye, what is called the retina. And these sensory cells are called rods and cones. Rods don't have much to do with seeing color. They're mostly used to be able to see in dim light. They're highly sensitive to light, but they are not so sensitive to color. That's why, like, when it's really dark out, like at night, like you're sort of night vision, you don't really see color very well. You just see light and dark. But your cones, the other sensory cells in your eyeballs, actually can pick up on colors. And we have 3 types of cones. So with that information in your head, let's talk a little bit about color. So color as pigments and color as light wavelengths are slightly different. Of course, ultimately, when we look at a pigment, we are seeing that color due to light wavelength. So light bounces off a pigment, enters our eye, and that's how we see it. But primary colors for pigments are very different from the red, green, blue, or yellow wavelengths of light in terms of how they mix and produce color. So if you mix blue and yellow paint, it will make green. But if you combine blue and yellow light, it actually makes a white light. So if you combine green and red light, you get yellow, whereas green and red paint makes a sort of muddy brown. And if you mix all of the colors of paints, as you probably know from kindergarten, it creates brown. But if you mix all of the light colors, like you have a spotlights and all sorts of different color, and you mix all of them, it's going to create white. So light wavelengths interact in different ways than pigment molecules to create color. So I wouldn't say that primary colors are universal, because wavelengths of light don't simply come in like red, blue, and yellow, or red, blue, and green. Primary colors like red, yellow, and blue are based on paint pigments, and color theorists came up with these as primary colors. It's not based in the science of light. But even when it comes to light, I wouldn't say there are exact primary colors. So while we sometimes describe our cones as being sorted into three categories of red cones, blue cones, and green cones, meaning that these cones pick up on those types of light, it's actually a little bit messier than that. Light is a spectrum, so our eyes pick up on the spectrum of wavelengths. So we have three types of cone cells, and they don't each only pick up on one type of color. There's actually a range of light wavelengths that are able to trigger each type of cone cells. So instead of labeling these cone cells as red cones, blue cones, and green cones, perhaps the more accurate name is L, M, and S cones, which stands for long, medium, and short, referencing the types of wavelengths they tend to be sensitive to. So S cone cells, short wavelength cone cells, mostly pick up on blue light, because blue light tends to have a shorter wavelength. But more precisely, there's like a bell curve from around 400 nanometers wavelength to 530 nanometers of wavelength that these S cones can, but don't always pick up on. So this is the same case with the medium and long cones. In fact, they overlap with each other quite a bit. So these are the green and red cones. The M cones, the medium cones, pick up on a good amount of green light, but they can also pick up on some yellow and red. And the L cones, the long cones, pick up on mostly red light, but they can also pick up a little bit of yellow and green. So there's overlaps of the ranges of the type of light that each cone can respond to. Not only is each cone capable of picking up a spectrum of light, the color you perceive is actually determined by the combination and strength of activity of your cones. So say you've got some short wavelength cones that are picking up some blue, and then you've got some of the long wavelength cones that are picking up red. You may see something like kind of a purpley color or something, or you know, the number of cone cells that are being activated, or the strength of the activation, is going to determine how bright something is, what color it's going to be, the hue. And that's why we can see an incredible, nearly infinite range of colors, shades, and hues. So a little bit about human eyeballs. Humans are trichromats. We typically have three types of cones that detect three ranges of light, those S, M, and L cones that I described earlier. Most mammals are actually dichromats, having only the S cones, the short wavelengths, and the L cones, the long wavelength cones. But there are also monochromats, animals who do not perceive color and see in black and white. Now, you may have heard at some point that dogs see in black and white. That's not true. Dogs are actually dichromats, so they do see a range of color, maybe not as much of a range as humans do. But in terms of monochromats, animals that truly only perceive in black and white, these are typically cetaceans like whales and dolphins, and pinnipeds, seals, sea lions, and walruses. But before we get too smug about our amazing color vision, there are also animals who have more cones than humans. These are tetrachromats, which include certain species of birds, reptiles, fish, and amphibians. In fact, it's thought that the common ancestor to all vertebrates was actually a tetrachromat, having four types of cone cells, but that many mammals lost these extra cones. And the reason, perhaps, that we lost these extra cones is the nocturnal bottleneck. This is the theory that most mammals were forced to become nocturnal due to predation and competition with dinosaurs. So tetrachromats, having those four cones, can see a wider range of light wavelengths. And often this includes UV light. However, you do not have to be a tetrachromat to see UV light. All you need is at least one of your cone cells to be sensitive to that light and for your eyeball to actually allow UV light to pass through the lens. So for instance, human cones can theoretically detect UV light, but the light is actually blocked by our lens. So people without the lens or with an artificial lens are actually slightly sensitive to UV light and can see a sort of bluish white or violet light. But that's not to say that this is the same as, say, another animal who can see UV light, because our cones may not be quite as sensitive to UV light or pick up the full range of UV light. So a tetrachromat might see this light in a much richer way. We just simply don't know what it's like because we're not a bird. We can never get into the brain of a bird. Well, I don't want to say never, but with our current technology, so far we have not avatared into the brain of a bird, even though I would love that. That's my dream. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when I get back, I'm going to talk about some more listener questions and answer them to the best of my ability.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
So here is an email in response to my recent Falling with Style episode. This listener wrote, I like this as usual, but you left out flying fish. I wonder if you could do an entire episode about flying fish. There is a southern constellation of Volans, the flying fish, but there are no legends associated with it. It's a modern one invented by astronomers during the Age of Exploration. Astronomers made up a lot of constellations which are no longer, quote, official. Today there are 88 official constellations, many of which are animals. And many of the constellations no longer official were also animals, such as the cat, the toad, and the flamingo. There are not any plant constellations. Wikipedia has an article on the former constellations. Could you do an episode about the constellations? This is from Stephen M. Thank you so much, Stephen. Honestly, it sounds like you know way more about constellations than I do. I love constellations. I love the stars. Typically, I can't see them because I live in the city and light pollution prevents us from seeing the full range of stars, which is kind of sad. But the last time I went up into the mountains, I did have a wonderful view of the sky. I actually went to like a star tour thing where they told you about all these constellations and all these stories, like these ancient, I guess, tales. And it was still kind of difficult. And I really can see why it was such a wonderful storytelling tool. You're lying there in the dark. Maybe it's a little spooky or a little scared of predators, but then you have all these bright stars. And so you can point to them and connect the dots and come up with stories. And it's something that, while it's not true that these stars never change, of course, physicists would tell you that there is, of course, change in the stars and in the night sky, but it's very slow, and they are such a wonderful kind of constant thing that we all share to look up at. But I sadly don't know that much about constellations. Yeah, maybe I'll do some research into it and see if I can, do an episode about the real animals behind these constellations. But onto the other aspect of your question, which was flying fish. And those I do know a bit about. So I agree that flying fish are amazing. They are a family of fish found all over the world in tropical and subtropical oceans. They tend to be around 7 to 12 inches long, which is 17 to 30 centimeters, which makes them appetizing snacks for larger fish. So they have developed a strategy. They will take to the skies. They will launch themselves out of the water, spread these amazing fishy wings, and glide incredible distances. So their pectoral fins have evolved to splay out like membranous plane wings, and they can leap into the air and glide amazingly long distances, up to around 160 feet or 50 meters at a time, which is just incredible. In fact, some of the records for flight are even longer due to having a nice updraft from, say, like a large wave. They have been recorded to have reached up to 1,300 feet or 400 meters. For something that is a fish, right? It is not supposed to be flying around. That is incredible. They're also fast. They can go over 35 miles an hour or 56 kilometers an hour. So these are serious flyers. It's true that they are gliders. They don't necessarily get much altitude when they're out of the water and they glide rather than flap their wings. But it is, for a fish, come on, that's incredible. Those amazing wings that are so aerodynamic and great for flying aren't so great for swimming. So they usually just keep them tucked at their side and do not use them for swimming, just use torso movements and their tails to swim around. And it's incredible, given that they are just like, they are able to launch themselves clear out of the water just from the flicking of their back tails and their abdomens. While their flight can get them out of sticky situations with predatory fish, sometimes they will then get picked off by predatory birds. So it's kind of like out of the frying ocean into the frying sky. Yeah, that makes sense. Anyways, on to another listener question. So Justine S. wrote to me about a viral video of a toucan with see-through skin and asked if it is real. So yes, this video of a toucan where they pull back at the nape of its neck and you can see right through the skin. It is a real video, but I think it is important for some context, lest you think that toucans like under their skin are just kind of like look like they're made out of glass or something. So in the video, someone parts the feathers on the nape of a toucan's neck, revealing this see-through membranous skin. So first of all, it's not necessarily a toucan specific trait. Birds in general have very thin skin. They evolve to become very light, these light, hollow bones, thin skins, because they had to drop a lot of weight, a lot of ballast, so that they could fly. So yes, birds have very thin skin. They do not like to be insulted. And also, if you shine a bright light source behind a fold of a bird's skin, it becomes translucent. You can even, like, for some small birds, shine a light on the top of their heads to be able to see how thick their skulls are. So the reason it looks so remarkable with the toucan is that toucans, it's the feather pattern of the toucans. They do not have any down. They just have an outer layer of feathers that grow in rows. And in between the rows of these feathers, there's actually no feather growth. Normally, this isn't so noticeable because the feathers will overlay each other and hide the skin. But if you part the feathers, you can see bald areas of skin where there are no feathers growing. And if you gently pull the nape of their neck and shine a light through it, the skin is translucent. Now, in the video, it may look like you can see like the bird's spine or something, but that thick part that is not see-through in the skin is actually not its spine. It's a thick band that is this vascular area from which the feathers grow. So that's the row that the feathers are all growing out of, and is kind of thicker, vascularized. So it is not its spine. You're not seeing its skeleton through its skin. You're just seeing sort of a flap, a membrane of skin. I mean, if you sort of shine a light through a thinner part of your skin, like through your palm or something, or through a finger, you can see it's not transparent or translucent, but you can see like some veins. You can even, like, if you shine a light through an ear or something, you can see some blood vessels at times. So it's like, you know, this is not something unique to birds or to this toucan, but for sure, in this particular case, the combination of the toucan not having feathers there, having sort of a thin nape of its neck, and having very thin skin, yes, that skin is translucent. So we're going to take a quick break, and when I get back, it's, hey, guess what? More listener questions. See you soon.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
So we are back, and here is another listener email that I received. I suggest you do an episode on legless lizards and how they are different from snakes. This could be a fun look at parallel evolution. Thank you for a great podcast, Daniel L. So yeah, this is an amazing thing. I love legless lizards. I love them. This is a great example of convergent evolution. So the distinction between parallel and convergent evolution is, it always confuses me. It's kind of nitpicky and tricky, and like there's technically a difference, but it's really hard to kind of make that determination. And sometimes there are like debates about it, but it's subjective, but this is my best way of explaining it. Convergent, the reason I would say that the case of legless lizards and snakes is a case of convergent evolution is that the last common ancestors of snakes and lizards had legs, and then snakes and lizards diverged, and then the snakes developed leglessness on their own, and then the lizards then developed leglessness in some species, so then they reconverge. So like when they like diverge and then reconverge with a trait, or they start off kind of looking different and then converge, that's convergent evolution. Whereas like with parallel evolution, I would say that's usually like, you know, they don't necessarily have that like initial divergence or initial separation in terms of traits. Their traits kind of like, you know, they start at point A and they both independently get to point B. Whereas with convergent evolution, they start at point A and point C, and then both of them come to point B. That's maybe not the best explanation of it, or the most encapsulates all aspects of it, like the relatedness of species and so on. But for me, that's kind of a good heuristic to tell the difference between convergent and parallel evolution. So in this case, I would say legless lizards and snakes are an example of convergent evolution. So legless lizards are indeed not snakes. Snakes are not simply defined as lizard without legs, even though that's kind of what it seems like they are. So snakes diverged from lizards around 150 million years ago. In fact, you can see these different evolutionary stories when you compare legless lizards with snakes. There are some significant differences, such as legless lizards having ear holes and eyelids, which snakes do not have. Also, legless lizards have really long tails, whereas snakes do not. Now, this sounds weird, right? Like, what part of the snake is the tail versus just more snake? It's not that clear. But snakes actually have relatively short tails. The tail part is behind their pelvis and does not contain any internal organs. It's a tail, whereas the rest of the snake, it's like this is its body, its torso. It's above the pelvis. It contains or internal organs, its stomach, etc. So like the tail part is a different part of the snake, even though it all seems like just like one tube. It does have an internal structure, of course. Not only did lizards and snakes independently evolve leglessness, even among the legless lizards, there are many cases of independent evolutionary paths that all led to no legs, which is incredible. Apparently, ditching legs when you are a burrower, like when you burrow in dirt, is a fairly popular and successful evolutionary strategy. So there are at least 8 groups of lizards who have all independently lost their legs, and each group contains multiple species. Some legless lizards look fairly snake-like. Some look kind of chunky. They're like thick. And some kind of look like pink worms. They're really wonderful. It's a very diverse group of animals. There are also lizards. In fact, it's such a popular strategy that it seems to happen really quickly. There are Australian lizards called skinks that essentially became legless in around 3.5 million years, which that sounds like a lot of time, but in terms of evolution, that is very, very short. So it sounds counterintuitive, right? Like legs seem like a really good evolutionary trait. Why would you get rid of something that helps you get around? Well, if you spend a lot of time in like sand or soil, essentially just kind of swimming around in sand, having legs doesn't necessarily help you that much. And so by getting rid of the legs, you've made yourself more streamlined. It's always costly to have extra parts in evolution. You don't keep a part that you don't need because it usually costs something. Now, sometimes you do. You'll have like a vestigial organ or a vestigial body part if it's not really costing you that much and it doesn't affect your survival. But generally speaking, if you have something that is not helping you and it is maybe even getting in your way, you will become more streamlined. You will lose that. So this has happened in many different animal lineages. We talked about swifts recently, but their little legs have become almost vestigial. They still use their little feet to like hang on to the sides of buildings and stuff, but they cannot walk on those legs. They really can only fly and basically cling onto sides of buildings with these little tiny hooks on their feet. And in fact, this like snake body, right, is not unique to reptiles. There are also amphibians. These are called caecilians. They are a group of amphibians that look like a cross between a worm and a snake. And they are legless amphibians. So they live underground, and despite looking like large worms, their diet is typically made up of worms. So I guess you are what you eat. Although, yeah, I don't know. It's like I'm trying to imagine like these caecilians, which are basically like big worms, just eating a small worm. It feels wrong in a way, even though I know it's right. Anyways, the caecilian species Bularinjula titana, found in southeast Kenya, is a grayish-blue worm-like animal. It's an amphibian, of course, with segmented rings. I don't know if there's any Dune fans out there, but it kind of looks like a Dune worm, but small. it's pretty small. It looks like an overgrown earthworm. And females lay eggs, but they have a special trick when it comes to childcare. She grows a special layer of fatty, nutritious skin, and then it allows its offspring to nibble this skin. So it's like, it's always fascinating to me when animals, like, of course, mammals have lactation, right? We feed our young through mammary glands that produce milk, but mammals are not the only ones that like produce some kind of bodily effluence that we feed our young. The caecilian literally feeds it like mom jerky made out of the mother, that it basically the young can just kind of peel off little chunks of it and nibble on it, and it gives them nutrition. Of course, there's like birds that have developed crop milk where they create this sort of fatty, lipid-rich slurry in their crop and regurgitate it for their young. So, and some animals, like certain spiders, will just let their young eat them once they hatch. So, you know, gosh, the love of a mother. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I have a maternal instinct. I'm not sure if I'd let a baby eat my skin. Just going to put that out there. Well, that is it for listener questions. But of course, we have to do the mystery animal sound game. Now, I'm sorry to say there is no new mystery animal sound this week. I will reveal the answer to last week's mystery animal sound actually next week. But hey, that just gives you an extra week to try and guess last week's mystery animal sound. But here is a refresher for what that was if in case you missed it. Last week's hint was this: the sharks and the jets are about to have a showdown. They really ought to calm down. So there's that. Here's another hint. It's not aliens. But if you think you know who's squawking, write to me at creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com. You can also write your animal questions. And again, I will try to answer them either right back to you or, hey, even answer them on the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you like these listener question episodes. It really helps me out because, first of all, I really enjoy seeing your questions. It often sends me down on a research rabbit hole, so I love that. But also, it's a little bit chill. It's a little laid back. It gives me a little breather while also being able to talk to you guys, like, directly, which I love. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show and you leave a rating and review, I am super, super grateful for every one of you who have done that. It helps the show out immensely. And of course, like when I read the reviews, it makes me feel happy. It makes me feel like I am talking to people and not sending my voice out into the void. Which, you know, I guess the void is fine too. Hi, void. Anyways, thanks to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Or even listen to your favorite shows. I don't judge you. That is your business. I will stick out of your business. See you next Wednesday.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Did you catch season 3 of This Is Digital? Season 3 of This Is Digital goes behind the scenes to reveal how digital trends show up in everyday decisions and actions, including digital lessons from the EV revolution and the chief digital officer's role in disruption and culture. Featuring guests like Ekta Chopra of Elf Beauty and Tyson Jomini of JD Power. Do you have a digital mindset? Find out by checking out the latest and greatest on season 3 of This Is Digital and learn more at westmonroe.com.